Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the October 31 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. In this half hour, our panelists include Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden from AgriView in Morton, Illinois, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor LLC out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Steve Erdman, the president of the EFG Group from Chicago.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. While you're there, please do take time to purchase your tickets for our Farm Assets Conference. That's November the 24th, a Monday before Thanksgiving. The program includes keynote presentations on land values, crop insurance under the new Farm Bill, and the ARC PLC decision, as well as, of course, marketing panels on corn, soybeans, and cash grain. Lunch and parking is included for the $25 cost. Order your tickets now at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065, or online at willag.org. Let's begin today's discussion, as usual, with the list of items each of you believe should be taken up. We'll start with you, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
Number one, how long is this short-term problem with soybean meal going to last, and what are the implications going to be? Number two, given the change in Fed policy finally, how's the dollar going to impact commodity prices for the short term?
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
Yeah, I think we're still interested on this end, of course, is when's the producer going to sell some of this grain? And we've seen some beans selling this week, but corn continues to be pretty slow as far as farmers selling. And, you know, when's that pattern going to pick up, if anytime soon?
Ellen Dearden of AgriView.
I noticed that the open interest in both corn and soybeans dropped pretty dramatically over the last week's time, and that I thought maybe the speculative part of the market was back, but looking at that open interest, I'm not so sure.
Steve Erdman of the EFG Group.
I'd like to talk about the transportation logistics and how much this really screwed everybody up this year and just completely flipped the market. Well, for most people, I won't speak for everybody, but I think everybody was pretty bearish, and then it's obviously because of the problem we have getting product from point A to point B. We need to, like I think Dale said early on, we need to figure that out.
Well, let's start there, Steve. You and Aaron Curtis both picked up on this particular one, I and Dale. So the question really is on the transportation issues, I think, which dealt with meal to begin with. How much of a problem is it? How long will it last? And how much of a bump can it keep in commodities? And I don't know whether you want to pick more than one commodity in the process. Steve?
I think you can look at the oat market and what happened up in Canada back in the first quarter of this year as kind of a general broad indication of what to expect. I mean, I think we rallied oat prices 150%, and I think we could do something similar. I don't think people can forget that we're projecting ending stocks in the U.S. at 450 million. So to me, this rally, because of this logistical problem, is a gift in terms of the increasing supplies we're walking into. And all that could change a little bit, I think, with South America, but I still think we need to be focused on playing defense, especially with a number that big.
Dale Durkles?
Well, I think really, you know, as Steve pointed out, you know, this particular situation was mostly confined to meal at this point. It really seemed to be, well, maybe that was the focal point. Part of that was exaggerated also because we had come into this new crop with virtually no beans in the pipeline, which meant your processors had no inventory of beans. People on the end user side of bean meal were down scraping the bottom, and all of a sudden we ended up with a harvest delay in the early going, and bean meal supplies in the very short term got really hung up. And there were some cheap supplies out west, but you couldn't get them east because you had to go through Chicago to get them there. And this whole thing really caused some people to start double booking some meal, you know, just scrambling to get things covered. I think that culminated today, or might have, you know, culminated this week. And so I think some of this enthusiasm about the logistical issue in the short term is going to go away here for a while, although it's still going to be an ongoing problem all year.
Just a reminder to folks who are listening, this program was recorded on Thursday, the 30th day of October. Aaron Curtis of Midco, from your position inside an elevator system, how much of a problem has transportation been?
Well, I think there was some great fear heading into the harvest time frame that it was going to continue to be a logistical nightmare. And there's been some issues around rail issues. Haven't been as maybe as big a concern as we maybe thought 6 to 8 weeks ago. Now, there are some concerns still, but I think that continues to be more confined to the west and not nearly as a big of an issue here in Illinois, at least in most part of this state. I think trucks are continuing to be an issue. There's not enough trucks to kind of get stuff moved around. Barge freight continues to be, you know, kind of on the high side, although has backed off here the last 2 to 3 weeks as we've had some interruption in harvest progress, allowing barge loadings to kind of catch up a little bit. But, you know, 6 to 8 weeks ago, boy, we were thinking there was going to be huge lines at the elevator system. And here we've got some elevators that haven't really had much of a line at all in some instances. And now we're, you know, got elevators out in Iowa that are really going to struggle to even get full. So it's been another very odd harvest, Todd. And it looks like it's going to be continue to be some weird things happening the way just look at what the markets have done here the last week and a half.
Let me tap you on the shoulder again. I was interested in one comment, some elevators in Iowa that will struggle to get full. How can that possibly be the case?
Well, I think yields just a little bit disappointed than what they thought. Now, some of that factors into, you know, elevators kind of preparing themselves for some logistical nightmares, trying to get some stuff moved early, and then they, you know, the yields just aren't quite there, and then, you know, that space doesn't refill itself. So that's part of the issue too. But I think as the farther they get into it, and they, you know, heard, you know, south of there in Missouri, of course, they've had huge yields, and parts of the southern Midwest, they heard all these huge yields and expecting that to continue to work up through Iowa. But for the most part, there's some yields in Iowa that aren't quite as good as last year. In some cases, disappointed. Be interested to see if the rest of the group has heard some of the same things or not.
Ellen Dearden, would you like to follow up?
Yeah, I sure would. I think that we've got a lot of very local situations as far as basis goes, transportation, and even elevation. We're close to the, here in the Peoria area, we're really locked into the barge market. And barges were pretty slow coming north because the barges that were coming north were going to Chicago. So in order for them to stop and load grain to go south, that just wasn't happening. That seems to be easing up some. Trucks are a huge issue around here. Elevators cannot haul out fast enough. So there's lots of elevators in this area here that weren't taking in corn today, or, you know, we're taking in beans only here for the end of the week.
Anybody else have a thought on the ability to store this crop, to move it, transportation issues?
This is Dale. One thing I picked up in talking to a client over in East Central Illinois, there was even an elevator there over there that wouldn't take dry beans, simply that they didn't have any place to put dry beans. You know, the bins they had were full, and they didn't want to fill a bin partially full with dry beans, so they frankly just stopped taking dry beans. They wouldn't take dry corn either, but they'd take wet corn. I mean, it's just a lot of strange things happening this year with the processing and moving this crop into the pipeline.
I happened to be out on Monday coming towards Bloomington and stopped at a grain elevator, and they were 2,000 bushels short of being able to move corn out so that they could continue soybean harvest. They thought they might get the might get it done, but it was just a matter of two semi-loads. So there are some transportation issues. I suppose those show up each and every year. I think, Steve Erdman, you had a follow-up conversation.
I agree with the panel, and it's just been a strange harvest from what the expectations were before we got here. And I think Mother Nature really helped us out, depending on how you look at it. But it drew, I really thought we were going to get plugged. I thought the concentration or the glut of harvest was really going to be felt this year, especially with the transportation issues. But I think it's when I, as I said earlier in our conversation, I went home a couple of weeks ago and I was really surprised at the amount of beans that were left. And it's like everybody's mentioning, you know, that if the elevators are getting filled with corn and they got dryers going, and I think this crop has really been difficult to dry down. It's staying wet. I'm talking to guys in eastern and northeastern Iowa that are saying they're still testing around 22-23%, and we're almost to November 1st. You know, the wet bins are full. They're drying slowly. It's difficult for them to find room for the beans, but they have to, because obviously nobody wants to put beans on the ground. So you've got a whole bunch of issues that are kind of really impacting this fall, and at least a lot differently than I thought we'd be impacted.
So does that mean that basis will stay weak for a prolonged period of time while we work through all these issues?
If that's to me, Ellen, I would say yes, because to me, we still have a lot of corn based on Monday's crop progress. I think there's still quite a bit of corn out there. I mean, it is, I do believe what Aaron said, that the yields are a little bit disappointing, but I still think there's a lot of corn out there. And I'm really surprised, too, that, you know, there may be some elevators out west that don't reach our capacity. That blows my mind, to be honest with you.
One of the guys here did some work and looked back at potential size and new crop corn and beans, and looking at, you know, the old crop carry-in on inventories and stuff, and started looking at storage capacity by state in some places, and came up with the thought in looking at it that we are not going to be tight on storage. You know, everybody in the marketplace gets a little excited to hear about corn piles out on the ground, but as I've come to learn over the last 10 to 15 years anyway, everybody uses what I call permanent temporary storage. You know, simply I use it for the winter months themselves. It doesn't cost me a whole lot compared to putting up a steel or a concrete tank. And I have the grain out of there by the time I get into the late winter, spring, when there's weather risk, and it's cheap to use. And you take a year like 2 years ago, even last year, where they didn't have to use them in a lot of places, you didn't have any costs sunk into it. So everybody now hears about piles and thinks, oh my, we're running out of space. Well, we really aren't. It's space people plan to use when you have a good crop like this, too.
So we have a space utilization issue, or maybe not. I'm wondering about the ground piles, Dale, as you mentioned them. How long can they really stick around? And maybe, Aaron, you're better equipped to answer this one, or how long will they stick around? And I've asked this before, but are there issues related to those ground piles being around in January, February, or March that impact the marketplace in terms of price? So the longer they stick around, does that mean the longer that we have a depressed price, or are they just part of the total supply in the system at this point?
Well, I think Kerry's going to dictate some of that. I mean, the market's paying both the producer and the elevator to kind of store corn at this point. So that's going to dictate some. And this is not, it's people that have corn on the ground from the elevator system. You know, they've been doing this a lot of years. So, you know, some of that will stay. It kind of depends on when the market needs it, I guess, is the answer there. Todd, are they going to let basis kind of dictate when some of that corn begins to move? And, you know, it might be into next year, at least get through harvest. But I still think, you know, from our standpoint anyway, basis is still going to be dictated kind of what the producer wants to do here moving forward. You know, last year the producer was a very inconsistent seller of corn, and we saw basis levels, above average levels for most of the year, just because, this, you know, despite a very good crop last year, the producer just wasn't a very consistent seller, and basis had to do more work. And that's just going to, it's probably going to be a similar case this year, even despite the fact that we have, you know, over a 14 billion bushel crop, and we have over 7 billion bushels of corn yet to be harvested if you look at the USDA numbers. So, but overall, the farmer continues to be a pretty tight holder of grain, and that means basis kind of continue to try to encourage some movement, and you know, that's going to dictate kind of when, you know, these grain piles get picked up more than anything, Todd.
Will it also offer producers more opportunities over the coming months than they might expect, you suppose, Alan Dearden, in terms of potential sales, meaning inconsistency in farmer sales suggests that there'll be many pops that they can take advantage of, and how do they know which pop they should market on?
Well, basis is what really is the signal on when anybody should do selling. I mean, the board can go up and down, but basis should always be dictating when you're doing the selling. I have not seen any elevators that have a very attractive corn basis for any slot that I see. And, you know, farmers have recognized that. My perspective is that elevators over the last several years weren't able to make a lot of money through drying and storage because the volume wasn't there. And this year they're going to make sure that their margin covers not getting a hold of bushels at the right time. As soon as I see this basis move, I would be a willing seller. I've been selling the board. I don't know if that's, trying to sell the carry and then waiting for the basis to come back. I think that we've got a slot maybe in this February-March time frame. I expect that there will be limited amount of ground piles left by that time.
I have a question for Ellen, if I could. How sloppy did the Peoria basis get here recently this fall?
It just depended. Not really sloppy. I mean, the Peoria basis, I thought, stayed rather decent, all things considered. 17, 20 under was really a pretty wide basis for us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, but
I worked
at
Peoria. I worked at the Riverside Elevator for 5 years, you know, 30 years ago, and it's typically we'd 15, 20 under would be the worst we'd see, and
right.
15, 20 over would be the best we'd see. But
yeah.
I was just curious how, because I haven't watched it that close this fall.
Well,
I think you're right.
And the river has to fight with the processor in
sure.
this particular market, and the processor
that
really dictates price now.
I remember when they took East Peoria Elevator out of mothballs and filled it with grain, because at the time in the fall we were 70 under the May or 75 under the May or something. And I think he had a similar situation to the farmer this year, as you said, and it does incent them to try to capture some of that carry. I'm just not sure how much attention the producer pays to basis, unfortunately. I wish they would more, but my experience has been that they aren't that attuned.
They're still flat
to,
price sellers, aren't they?
They are.
Because that's what they can watch one number.
You bet.
You know, one thing, and Ellen was talking about seeing an opportunity out there in February, the way the cycles are counting out now on corn, if you assume the October low was a 20-week low, it says our next low is going to be out there. It's going to be a John Deere low right about the middle of February. And the way the market's shaping up when I look at it, you know, when we get done with this rally we've had for the last month, and I think we're arguably close here today, I told people to make some sales here today if they really needed to do something, but I preferred they do some hedge to arrive in the distance, that I think the corn market could end up on the board going into a choppy sideways market at this point, you know, and I think if that becomes the case, farmers may meter out corn on rallies, but probably never a big rally. And as you get deeper into the winter, then at that point, you know, we're going to be in a position where the people that use the corn are going to have to come after it. And yeah, I think there's a chance we could see basis coming together somewhat there late January, early February. But you got to counter that and be a little ahead, because somewhere along in there, farmers going to need money too. And, you know, so we're going to really push it. So the long-term game, though, when you look at corn still with carry out into the May, you know, I think you basically, you know, look on carrying the corn long haul if you can, and just meter out sales to do stuff to cover your cash flow, because by the time we get to spring, I think that's where your basis game will play out like it traditionally does.
You know, Dale, you mentioned that we could be in a choppy time frame here. You know, historically, when we've seen these big outside months, and this is an outside month higher in the corn, then we have gone into kind of a sideways mode that lasts for several months. And I think that that's very likely to see here in 2014, 2015, whereas the farmer has really turned bullish again. I mean, seeing this 60-cent up move turned him into a bull, and I'm not selling it till I have $4 cash kind of mentality. So I get a little bit nervous. I think you're right. As we go through the winter and those bills become due, they may be meting out corn on a regular basis, however.
Yeah, I think we probably see them more willingly sell beans and corn. You know, it's kind of interesting as I look back, and somebody asked me today, how long you've been at this, and I said, well, it's roughly right at 40 years now. I really liken this year a lot to 1977. And, you know, in 77 it was a late summer low, we had a rally during harvest, and then things just went sideways during the winter months, and then we had a kick even to higher levels as we finally got into late winter and on into spring. So, you know, I think there's some long-term variables that are coming into play that still look good to me, and I'm telling farmers that I'm in it for the long haul. I think corn is a good item.
Do you think, Dale, that there will be a change in acreage that has yet to come?
Well, I think a couple of things. You know, I suspect at this point everybody's going to pencil in a little bit lower corn acreage next year. The problem I think we're going to see is some people are going to go, well, we'll plant less corn and more beans. And I think we're going to plant less grain, period. The one thing I picked up out in western Iowa, and I started looking at some data this week and haven't done a lot with it yet, but a good longtime client I've known well, he said, you would be surprised at the number of fields he's starting to see out in western Iowa that are being reseeded to pasture. And we've gotten rid of a lot of pasture in the last few years. We've had land, about 6 million acres, come out of CRP since roughly over the last 5 years. You know, the worst of that stuff in this kind of environment, they're probably not going to head to row crop, and I think we're going to see the overall acreage number across the board on a total aggregate probably turn down. So we could lose corn acres. We could actually end up losing some bean acres to a small degree, too. That's still to be determined. But, yeah, I think we're starting to look at lower corn acreage next year, and I wouldn't be shocked that we lose corn acreage down in Brazil this winter.
Aaron, you suggested earlier that some Iowa elevators will not be filled up completely. I'm wondering whether on the corn acreage thought process, whether you think there are fewer acres this year. Too.
Well, you know, I still think that still could be some of the issue here moving forward is that, you know, maybe there's still some acres adjustment to come. You know, I have some customers in northern Illinois that still think, you know, they continue to see beans coming into their elevator and overshooting some of their estimates for what they saw despite their yield estimates they're getting, which are very good, by the way, but still wonder if maybe, you know, bean acres are a little higher than what we thought. And, you know, there were some areas, once again, that, you know, in Iowa that were a little too wet again, unfortunately, for the second year in a row. So, you know, that kind of played into some of the yield deterrent here as we head into fall. But, you know, I don't know if we'll see much adjustment coming from the USDA here anytime soon. But, you know, we'll probably see some sort of adjustment in the January report, and we could still see corn acres adjusted somewhat lower too, Todd. That could be playing into, you know, the overall production numbers still as we head forward.
Alan Dearden on your list was open interest. You say it's dropped, the numbers have, and you're worried about the speculator.
Well, I'm not worried about the speculator, but I thought that the spec was back in this market, and that was part of the reason for the upside. But when you start checking it out, the open interest dropped in both beans and corn. You kind of expect it to be in the beans because people are moving out of that November position as we go into deliveries here today. But that the open interest dropped on the corn, and that suggests to me that, you know, maybe we don't have a lot of bears left in this market. Those, you know, are certainly the strong hands traders. But we've got bulls there, and, you know, I don't think the speculative part of this market is maybe as great as what I thought it was.
You know, to add on to that, you know, and when you step back and think about it at this point, you know, anytime you have your first move out of what might be a big low, the first move up is pushing the old shorts out of the market. So you would expect open interest to decline somewhat, you know, on that first initial rally along the way. So seeing open interest go down in this mix over the last month here now really hasn't surprised me a whole lot in that regard. The real key and the speculative money, you know, the new bulls, they'll come back once we get the market, you know, breaking back down to some lower levels once again, you know. So I guess the decline in open interest doesn't bother me as much, other than the fact it tells me, you know, this rally we're on probably isn't easily sustainable.
So, Dale, I want to follow up with you one other question. You were wanting just to talk a little bit about the federal policy changes that happened this week. The Fed says we're going to get out. QE is over, though there is some debate as to how over that might be, and you're wondering what impact that might have on the dollar.
That's going to be a learning curve at this point. You know, the Fed getting or terminating their quantitative easing program means that they aren't going to be buying any new issues, but the issues that they already have acquired here over the last few years, you know, as they come due, they'll be replacing those. So there's still going to be a part of the market going forward. I think it's more important, really, when you look at the Fed, maybe to try to now monitor their interest rate policy a little bit more. You know, and they told us they aren't going to do anything soon, but then again, you know, you go to a day like today, we had third quarter GDP up 3.5%. You know, and if you get good economic numbers here over the course of the next number of months, they may come at us a little bit sooner than we think. And when you look at what's going on around the world, you have the Fed that's probably getting ready at some point, we don't know when, to start raising rates a little bit. But the Europeans over there, they're in the opposite boat with the economy performing poorly, that they've got to continue to have an easy money policy. And so in that regard, it tends to say dollar is going to have a tendency to stay firm. Doesn't mean we're going to go a lot higher, but it's going to stay firm. So that's going to be counter a little bit to really getting people real excited here and playing the long side of the grains for a while, because they'll tend to be somewhat pessimistic as far as export demand is concerned. Although I found that when grain supplies are abundant, prices are relatively cheap, and they're still relatively cheap, the level of the currency doesn't matter as much.
We talked a bit about soybeans at the front end of the program. I do want to transition to the beans more fully, but I would like each of you to categorize your view of the corn market in whatever terms you'd like to do that. Normally we would say friendly, choppy, sideways, something along those lines. And then also to tell me where you believe the categorization for soybeans should be. Dale, just a quick word from you, and then we'll move on to the others.
I think the corn market, we're going to turn into a choppy sideways trader, as I said earlier. You know, I think we're about to the upper end of the range. The low side is going to be, I think, down at 340, 350. The beans, I think this rally is just about exhausted. I look for a fairly hard break. We could take another 60, 70 cents out of this thing again. But I'm not so sure in the long haul that the beans are done. So I'm short-term a little bit negative in the mix. Long-term, I'm still not so sure we've seen this rally run out of gas.
Ellen Dearden?
I favor kind of a sideways market in the corn. I think that we have put a little high in here. I am looking at the 350 area to be supportive on nearby corn. The bean side of things, I met my upside objectives for this move. I think we could easily see 60 cents down. And at that stage of the game, I wouldn't be surprised to see buyers come into this market. I'm just not sure, given the South American situation, whether we'll make new highs in the first quarter of 2015.
Steve Erdman.
I'm probably more bearish than the rest of the crew. I think this problem with transportation is already beginning to work itself out pretty quickly. We're seeing values for November rail less than half of what the secondary market was charging a month ago. And I think that's really hard for us to keep a handle on, but I think it's going to work itself out very quickly, and then we're going to be slapped in the face with really some significant supplies of beans, even though we've got a real dynamic crush demand and a real dynamic export demand. I do think the market in the short term transition from a supply focus to a demand focus, but I think we're going to shift back and realize once again that we've got a lot of beans that need to be absorbed into the world markets, and I'm just fearful that the corn markets followed beans up, and you know the wheat markets allowed corn to rally, but I think once this bean deal's done, and I think I agree with Dale, I think it's done. It could be done in the short term here. I think it's going to create pressure back on corn. So I think beans could go down and make new lows potentially, and I think corn could go back and test its lows. To me, the big thing in the corn market right now is when you look at the fact that we're going to produce close to a 15 billion bushel crop, at the end of the day, we still got an ending stocks number of 2 billion bushels. So that shows the demand here in the United States and the demand in the world, and that's good. I mean, I'm not super negative agriculture. I'm just trying to be realistic about price action and where I think it can go, and then what I think might happen going into the new year.
And Aaron Curtis.
Well, Todd, I guess I kind of agree. I think we're going to kind of go sideways, maybe choppy a little lower. I think seasonally you look at November corn or the month of November, and it typically is one of a little weaker nature, and I guess that kind of fuels into what I think will happen. I think we'll turn this thing over a little bit and grind a little lower with half the crop to go. I think we'll see what happens here with farmer selling. We did see an increase in bean selling here this week, and I think that helped put in a little bit of a top here on the beans. Still not seeing much on the corn side, but I agree with Steve. It's more of a follower to beans at this point. I think we turn this thing back down a little bit as we head into November, and I think kind of helps fuel some of that crop insurance conspiracy that we're hearing a lot from the producers, Todd, and I'll let you explain that. But I know there's some producer people out there that think this month is going to be positive just to kind of mess with their crop insurance premiums. So
they always do.
Right. So we'll see. We'll see if the lower trend as we move into November helps continue some of that talk or not, Todd.
And so on the soybeans, I think everybody was bearish the bean market. Probably everybody's looking at the large size of the crop, transportation issues they saw as a pop, and then ending stocks really is the number that makes, I'm sure, each of you most negative to the marketplace. But there are other fundamentals in play every 6 months, of course, in this marketplace. Those come from South America. They're late starting their planting season, which is a twofold problem, apparently. One, they will have not a harvest as early. That might play into the market in the United States, I would think. And the other is that the Safrina crop or second crop, whether that be corn or soybeans, will be delayed to the point that it might either end up in dry, very dry conditions or that it will get colder than the crop really needs it to have. At least that's what many of the weather people we talk to during the week have to say about the marketplace. So what do we know about the South American crop, its size at this point, potentially, that is, and what kind of impact does it have on the marketplace? Ellen Dearden, why don't you start?
I'm looking for a large Brazilian crop, even though with the late plantings, I think you have to scale back how large is large. Weather-wise, I think it's going to be extremely critical because it looks to me like pretty good weather in Argentina, maybe even a hair too wet there. And in the southern part of Brazil, the old areas, Paraná, Rio Grande do Sul, maybe a bit wet, and maybe even rust will be an issue there, whereas to the north be dry. So I think it may be a very similar situation to what we see in the States when the eastern corn belt's dry and the western corn belt's wet or something along that line. But I think everybody's pretty well geared up for a large South American bean crop, maybe a smaller one on the corn side of things, particularly because of the second crop of corn.
Steve Erdman, you've been watching South America?
Yeah, I think it's an issue, but I agree with Alan, it's not that big an issue. I think, by and large, we expect big production out of South America. I mean, that can change, obviously, with the weather, but I think their issue is like ours. They can produce a big crop. Well, I should say like our current condition. They can produce a big crop, but I think they have a tough time getting it shipped. You know, they're still battling that, and they have for the last couple of years, and I think that's their biggest challenge, I think, is even if they do produce a big crop, can they get it shipped out of Brazil, or can Argentina get the producer to move crop given the currency valuations they've got and how that impacts the producer and his willingness to sell. So, you know, I don't, China's big demand, South America's big supply, U.S. is big supply. Can we get it to them? And Europe's big demand also. I really don't want to get bullish on South America.
Yes, so for each of you, and I'll let Dale and Aaron jump in on this, it really is about the 450 million bushels left at the end of the year.
It is for me.
Yeah, I think so. And look at what the world carryout is. I mean, it's big.
No, you know, I think people need to step back from the fray once in a while. You know, when we're looking at the world carryouts or we look at the U.S. carryouts, the bean carryout, we look back in history. You know, these big numbers that we have at this point tend to not materialize when we get to the bitter end. And I'm going to suspect that by the time we get down, our bean carryout will be somewhere a smidgen under 400. I don't think it's going to be over 400 at all. But even when you look at the world crop inventories at this point, and it doesn't matter if you look at beans or wheat or corn, everybody's acting like these are real burdensome numbers, and they aren't. You know, they're comfortable, but they're numbers that can't go away. And then you have to understand that, you know, when you look at this past year we went through, not only in the U.S. with good crops, but around the world where you mostly had what I'll say is good crops with a couple exceptions, you don't do that. And so when you start looking ahead to this coming year, you got to be careful in saying, you know, it's just always big crops, always big crops. And we're not, you know, most years you have, just like here in the U.S., you'll have people that have good crops, people that don't have great crops, you know, and we'll probably cycle back into that around the world as well. And then Elwin Taylor has always talked about, and you can really see it in yield perspectives, this long, roughly 19, 20-year cycle where you have good crops for 18, 19 years. Then you go into a period where you have a lot more variability year to year. And that's where we're at right now. We came into this somewhere in the last 2 to 3 years. And so we're looking down the pike the next number of years where you can't guarantee we're going to have great crops all the time. And if you take 1.5 million off the corn acres, you go back to a trend line yield for the new crop this coming year, for example, you got a carryout you can easily argue is 1.5 billion. It's not bearish. You know, and I think everybody has just not really backed up and looked at really where we are at this point. Everybody's looking at the tree and not looking at the forest.
Yeah, I think somebody, and I don't recall which of the analysts was telling me this and whether it was on or off the air, but about demand, and not exactly about demand, but mostly about consumption. That consumption, for instance, we know how much corn will be used for ethanol. We just know, all right? We pretty much know how much corn is going to be used for livestock within 100 million or 200 million bushels or something like that, relatively speaking. So, and then the export market does move around, but when you have consumption patterns that aren't tending to change very much, it sounded to this analyst, and it makes some sense to me, that you're always just one good or bad year away from a bigger move in the marketplace because consumption doesn't shrink and grow as much as it used to. And I don't know whether that's really true or not, but that was the premise of the thought.
Well, when you really look at corn, what a lot of people don't really appreciate at this point, you know, and it's the feed ingredient side of the thing. You know, we've got this number there or word that people tend to forget about, and it's called residual. And that residual bounces around a lot, you know, and that's something people don't think about. You know, when you have low prices and huge crops, your residual tends to be big. There's a lot of reasons for that. And so you do see that feed number tend to have a little bit more volatility than people give it credit for. But to a certain degree, what he said there was right, and you're really only 1 year away from being abundant or tight again, no matter, you know, depending on where you're starting from.
I don't know. I just have a tough time with being too optimistic when you're staring at, I mean, use whatever number you want. I think Dale said lower ending stocks to 400 million. It isn't like we're trading at $7 or $8. We're trading at $10 to $11. We're trading meal at $400. It's not at 250 to 300. This to me is a very big deal. You know, we had good corn prices when we had a relatively tight stock to usage number, and look what corn prices are now compared to what they were 2 or 3 years ago. And it's for a reason. Our ending stocks have expanded. World ending stocks, world feed grain stocks have expanded. I agree with Ellen. World ending bean stocks, I think, could quickly get problematic. And to me, whether you're at 350 million or 400 million or 450 million, the number's too big. The reason that we're rallying right now is there's a real short-term situation in terms of being able to move product. And once that disappears, I'm concerned.
I got a different question for you, because I want to know where you think the midpoint of the market is at this point. There's been lots written, of course, by the University of Illinois about the new plateaus and where that midpoint might be. The old one for corn was, what, $2.42 over the long term. That's based on the data or something along that line. And the new one they suggest is $4, what, 60 or 65, something like that. On the soybeans, the new one, I think they're at 10.50 or 10.80. But it sounds to me, for instance, Steve, is if you aren't convinced that we're that high.
No, I don't think for the time being. And I don't want to oversell this, but it's, you know, again, 2 billion bushels of corn after a 15 billion bushel crop is a good thing. It's a good thing. And I agree with Dale that you'd start tweaking any kind of variables in supply demand, and you can rapidly get to 1.5, and I agree with them that that's not bearish either. And the demand base that we have in the world, I don't think we can overstate or understate. It's tremendous. It's, you know, China's hog herd is some ungodly number, like 650 to 750 million hogs. It's more than the next four leading countries. It's a big deal. But all that being said, the thing that I'm most concerned about is this bean number. And the fact that we've gone from you know, a pipeline that was evaporated to something 3 or 4 or 5 times as large, it's a big deal, and it's going to be difficult. It's going to tend to impact the grain complex in general, I'm fearful. But 465, I wouldn't agree with that. I think we could trade between $3 and 450. So, you know, I'd be more like a 375 mid-range point. And beans, I think, could be 11.50 on the upside and maybe 8 or 8.50 on the low side. So, you know, I think it's the midpoint's a little bit, well, not just a little bit, a buck and a quarter maybe lower than where we are now, or at least 75 cents lower than where we are now. And that's optimistic, I think.
Let's wrap it up. Always give everybody a chance for a final word. Aaron Curtis, you've been waiting silently.
Well, I think this market rally that we've had, short covering rally here, is kind of an opportunity here, especially on the soybeans, to kind of get caught up on some sales. The same with corn. I think there'd be a spot in here where you could make some sales, and if you needed to re-own it, do it on paper and increase some of your flexibility and reduce some of your risk here moving forward.
Aaron Curtis, of course, is with Midco. He's out of Bloomington, Illinois. Ellen Dearden is with Ag Review in Morton, Illinois.
I think you should be selling beans in here, selling beans in here, selling beans in here. The basis is good. Look for that Dace Jan slot. Basis is really good there. Sell beans, hold corn, and sell the carry in the corn. And I think we can own paper in a better situation on the beans than holding inventory.
Dale Dirkles is with AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois.
I still see a lot of similarities this last year to 77. And to remind people, prices were much better by the time we got into the spring of 1978 than where we were in the fall of 77. So I see some upside opportunity in the long haul, and I'm going to stay with it. The other thing I note in the beans, we have in long term a 2- and 3-year cycle that flow through those. And the rally, the low we had here and the rally off that low suggests maybe the 3-year low has been put behind us. So that tells me I can see a little bit better market, but it's going to take time to develop, no doubt about it. And we're going to have a break in both corn and beans off the highs we're having here now before we get to see any kind of appreciation in the long haul.
And Steve Erdman is with EFG Group out of Chicago, Illinois.
I guess I agree with Ellen more than Dale, and I think Aaron was in that direction also. I just want to be real, as defensive as a producer can be right now, because their cost of production is, I think, problematic for them. I think fertilizer and seed prices are huge, and I think the banking sector is getting a little bit nervous, and I do agree with Dale in terms of how the atmosphere is for the 70s and into the 80s, but I think we might be getting more into an 80s atmosphere where the financiers are getting nervous in about cash flow and debt. And I just think right now, you know, I think you need to be defensive. And I don't want to oversell it and be the bearish, most bearish person on the block, but I want the guys to be playing defense.
So make some markets, Steve.
You bet.
Thanks to our panelists today, including Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, Ellen Dearden of AgriView out of Morton, Illinois, and Dell Durkles of AgriVisor from Bloomington, Illinois, along with special guest Steve Erdman of the EFG Group in Chicago. That wraps up this October the 30th edition of Commodity Week. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.